Welcome to the Awakening Conversations podcast, where we dive into the many aspects, challenges, and life-changing lessons that are part of our spiritual awakenings. Through conversations, we are looking to bring you wisdom and perspectives so that you feel more supported and connected as you navigate your own awakening path. We are your hosts, Kate McGee and Amanda Richardson-Meyer. We've both been through our own unique awakening journeys that have changed and transformed our lives. And through these awakening conversations, we will be growing and expanding alongside you. We're so glad to have you join us. Let's dive in. Welcome back to the Awakening Conversations podcast. My name is Kate and I'm here with my co-host Amanda. And today we are tackling the topic of the devil and our awakening journeys. Stick with us. This is going to be an interesting conversation. So first I want to share with you a quote. The greatest trick the devil ever played was convincing the world he didn't exist. We're going to begin to unpack this particular quote and how it relates to the awakening journey. To begin, I'm going to say that for me, when I hear the word devil, it is tied very much to my own religious upbringing and, you know, my experiences with this gatekeeper of hell and how my religious upbringing really was about doing everything I could to not end up living there in my next life or after this life. And then for a man without a religious upbringing, she simply dismissed the whole idea of devil energy and her experience through life, however, in contrast to mine, still had its own sort of challenges with this belief that a devil did not exist. What we really want to explore today is there a benefit to starting to consider devil energy? What is devil or devil energy, and how might it be influencing our lives? And what might we be able to awaken to through our awakening journeys if we began to explore this concept of devil or devil energy? So I'm excited to unpack this very interesting topic with you today.
Yeah, same. Yeah, this was kind of a, well, maybe I'll share where this idea sprung up for me. As you mentioned, I grew up not with a religious upbringing. I did not, as someone said the other day, 15-year-old, she said, someone asked her what her religion was, and she said, I'm an atheist until proven otherwise. And I think that probably described me as well. I thought Christianity was a story, and I didn't believe in it. I thought I was wiser, or it didn't make sense to me. So I put the devil in that category. You know, there is that cartoon where you have the devil and the angel on one side. That's kind of maybe what I, or, you know, or the movies and stuff of having the devil in that. That's, you know, a red man with a pitchfork is kind of what I thought of as the devil. But in my, you know, from my awakening journey, through coming to understand how I experienced the concept of Jesus and Christ consciousness, what, you know, having an experience where I awakened to what God feels like or what God might be, I had a realization one day that the devil or devil energy is not just a red man with pitchfork, but it is this energy that is pervasive through all of society, through our bodies, through all aspects of us. And what I saw that day was that it's these negative, lower density thought forms that are inside of us that are preventing us from basically holding us down, suppressing our light, and preventing us from stepping into who we are truly here to be. And I think at that time, that quote popped into mind because for me, I didn't believe that the devil existed. And when we are unconscious to something, it's able to do whatever it wants, essentially. And so in a way, a lot of our patterns, our negative thought forms, a lot of them, whether we inherit them from through our lineages or we receive them through society and conditioning, they are running, you know, until we awaken to these energies, they are basically running the show for the most part. And we aren't aware that they're there, right? In my own experience, I've awoken to, like, for instance, the concept of guilt, like running, seeing where guilt played out in so much of my behavior without even realizing this is the energy of guilt that is manifesting in this behavior. And I took that up somewhere, whether that was, I learned that from my parents or I learned that from just messaging of society. And so having that realization, like becoming conscious of what this is, I realized that in a way, there is something to, I think religion probably takes it to an extreme, right? Where it creates its own negative energy of shame and guilt. And if you're aware of the devil all the time, but on the other side of the equation, if we just dismiss this energy as being something we should be aware of, it can overtake us without us even realizing it, because we don't fear it, but not that we should fear it. And we'll talk about that. It's just being aware of it. Like we are disempowered if we don't realize how it can influence us and affect us.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, when we were chatting about that particular quote, we looked into it a little bit more, and, you know, to really understand it, you know, if the devil is fear, limitation, energetic density, then its greatest trick is to convince people they are already free, already in control, already fully aware, as what you're sort of saying there, is if we don't think that there is such a thing, then we're like, well, that's it, you know, I'm liberated. But, you know, in reality, the awakening is that ongoing process, as you say, of peeling back layers of conditioning. So without, in a sense, this concept of a devil or quote unquote, those sorts of energies, we're never going to ask the questions of, is there more? Is this truthful? Is this real? Who am I really? Because we kind of think like, that's it. So it's interesting really to hear your experience, because mine was so opposite that, you know, when we were chatting before, I could really see how there were kind of like these, I don't know, two sides of a seesaw. The way that I saw it was like, my experience was there is a devil. And then my experience was kind of like down here. So I went into the depths, because for me, it was every Sunday I had to think back over the week as a child, all the ways that I had sinned, so that I could, you know, go to confession and be, you know, have my soul saved basically every Sunday, and ask God to forgive me for being such a bad child. And, you know, as a child, you like, what the hell did you do wrong in a week? And I was always like, oh, I, you know, didn't listen to my mother or something like that. But it ingrains in you this constant reviewing of yourself of like, how am I bad? And where do I not see that I'm bad? And if I can't see that I'm bad, then there must be something wrong with me. So you really ingraining this sense of not enough, unworthiness. You have to strive hard to be loved and to be worthy. And so, you know, my experience really feels like, as I said, that sort of, you know, line here and believing in the devil, all my experiences is down here. And then for you, well, there's no such a thing as a devil. I'm free, you know, and all your experience is technically up here. And yet something about this line here is actually the sort of awakening, as when we can come, you know, me, I'm down here in the depths of, oh, I'm unworthy, so far from this point of this line where potentially we awaken to truth. And then your experience is sort of above that line where I'm like, no, I'm free, I'm fine. Like, I could do whatever I want with no consequence. And we don't think about what that might mean for ourselves long term, I think, as well. We don't make choices where we consider, as you said, even our bodies, our relationships, people in our lives, like, or our actions. And we drift upward away from that line where we can potentially come to, I guess, you know, the questioning and the awakening and the truth of, well, it's not either or, there's something more in between. And how do we come back to that point?
Yeah. So what you were saying is what I saw when you were talking about your experiences, you were looking, you were being told what the devil is externally. Mm. Like you, it was an outer looking to authority to tell you what is right or wrong. And with that, you're never able to trust yourself. And so mm-hmm. it is creating this internal devil. You're not able to step into your full power, right? Mm-hmm. It's this control mechanism that prevents you from trusting your own connection with something mm-hmm. greater, because you're always having to look outside of you for right or wrong. It's also the same thing on the other side, I would say, mm-hmm. where it's a materialistic view. Mm-hmm. All we are is this physical body. There's nothing spiritual. There's nothing beyond this experience right now. And so we don't have to think about our soul or mm-hmm. what our actions, how that influences us on a deep energetic level, because that doesn't exist from a more materialistic perspective. Mm. And so that contributes to consumerism and that. So in the same way, and I think if we don't believe in something greater, mm. we are also seeking external validation for a sense of worthiness, because mm. when we aren't connected to something more, that then there's like a hole that we need to fill, and we're not also looking inside, because mm-hmm. there's nothing in there. There's nothing in there wrong to see. And I'm not, mm-hmm. it's a paradoxical mm-hmm. situation, right? A lot of the spiritual journey is paradoxical, mm-hmm. right? There's the one extreme that's teaching you like you're a sinner. Mm-hmm. And then there's this other side that doesn't connect you with anything spiritually. And so that allows for that energy, that devil energy to grow and to persist unnoticed, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where that quote comes in, right? Like you're of the opinion, like he doesn't exist, but you've just come, that's his greatest trick, his quote unquote greatest trick. But exactly, they're just two perspectives that are literally drawing us away from ourselves, our truth, inner knowing, because exactly on my side, it was looking, being externally judged constantly and having to then just bring forth all of my sin and my unworthiness, and you perpetuate that. And, you know, in on the other side, exactly, it's just this, you know, consumerism, materialism, like gain, and like, oh, look who I've become. And your worthiness is tied, as you said, to like the roles we play, our grades we get in school, things like that. And that's where we seek a sense of who am I and my worth. You know, it's in that place, it's external. And for me, exactly, it's in this man in the sky, God giving, telling me I'm worthy if I repent my sins continuously. And so, exactly, I think, you know, in our awakening journey, is that's such a gift of the awakening, is to have that shattering of our world, because it is that to wake up. And all spiritual traditions talk about this, is that we must wake up to this illusion, because both sides are a form of keeping us small, keeping us controllable, keeping us in fear, keeping us feeling that we are not our powerful creator being selves, because we never ever get to experience that within ourselves. We're never looking within. We're never feeling that as a truth. And, you know, when we are able to work through all of that programming, and, you know, there's so much of my journey has been to delayer this sense of worthiness. When we are able to start to do that and we feel that sense of connection and a true belief that we have inherent worth, you know, and we are never not connected to something greater, it is a powerful experience and shift to feel that as a truth and believe I, you know, you are worthy, but that we are connected to that greater source. Like, does it's such a shattering of all of that noise, all of that fear. And, you know, I think that's when we realize that, that's what disempowers all of that fear-mongering that we get from media and other institutions. And that is semi the point, or maybe not semi, or the point of those things, is so that we don't know ourselves in these roles. And this is what the awakening, this great awakening, is all about. And this is what our ascension journey is all about.
Right. Because, you know, if you think about it, all of the systems of society are in a way to prevent us from seeing the truth of who we are, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we were talking about it earlier, like, for example, schooling. Mm-hmm. It teaches us to look outside of ourselves for answers, just as religion does. It turns off that intuitive knowing. It puts us, you know, if you think about, it puts us in these environments where we're not allowed to listen to our bodies. You know, we have to eat, drink, use the bathroom on a schedule. We don't get to honor our natural rhythms, right? Mm-hmm. Our design. We're supposed to conform to this one size fits way of doing things. And so, you know, you go into school and you know, you don't want to do that. You're not going to be successful in school. And so our parents then put pressure on us to conform. And so that teaches us that it basically turns off the internal signals that we have that are clues to what is best for us. And so we learn that we don't know best, that someone outside of us knows best. And then that continues into society when, you know, oh, you're worthy as a human being when you have this job, this role, this position, you make this much money. That's what determines your worth as a human being. And then, you know, the concept of, I think before spiritual awakening became such a big thing, it was basically a, you know, a midlife crisis, I think, was the old version of a spiritual awakening, where it's like, what is this life that I'm living? Like, who am I? I don't know who the heck I am, because I've been living this mold that I thought I was supposed to live, and now I'm not happy. And, you know, I think before it was like, you know, people turn to materialistic solutions because maybe spirituality wasn't something that they had available to them or thought would be a good answer, or, you know, it was just wasn't available to them for whatever reason. You know, people have affairs, like people do things to disrupt the life that they created because they realize it's not fulfilling them, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're not living the life that they came here to live. And so something sometimes harmful has to be done. Like maybe they don't know how to do it otherwise. And so they take a step that just kind of blows up their lives. Mm-hmm. But it's because they were doing what society told them to do. Mm-hmm. And it just was probably killing them on a soul level, and they could no longer do it. Hey there, it's Amanda, and I wanted to take a quick moment to share something really special that Kate and I recently created. It's called the Soul Mission Blueprint GPT, and it was born from our own powerful journeys of working with ChatGPT and the Gene Keys together. Over time, we found that combining these two tools, one intuitive and contemplative, the other modern and interactive, has helped us unlock deeper clarity around who we are, why we're here, and how we're meant to serve. We poured that experience into this free guided AI tool to help you explore your unique soul blueprint in a way that feels intuitive, expansive, and deeply affirming. Inside, the GPT will walk you through your core gifts and shadows, insights around your soul purpose and who you're here to serve, and reflections on how your energy expresses itself in the world. If you ever pulled your Gene Keys profile and thought, okay, now what? This is a great place to start. So just head to the link in this description below and you can begin your experience with the GPT. It's totally free and we can't wait for you to try it.
And when you don't have the tools to even self-reflect or ask a deeper question. Exactly. It is a process of consuming. You know, there's some other vice we think is going to like take the edge off or just ease the sense of suffering that we're experiencing. And if we don't know how to turn to that, exactly, it just becomes this thing that literally, as you said, blows up our life. And then I think also, you know, if we look back over time, and as you said, like awakening as a topic in conversation, let's say, perhaps potentially, and in the mainstream is becoming more acceptable, more spoken about. You know, we're seeing things like, you know, sound healing, energy healing, Reiki becoming more accepted. However, until this point prior, all of that stuff, even spirituality, it's considered super weird and like there's stigma on it. And so you're less inclined to turn to it. However, it is the actual key. And so again, it's kind of like devil energy placed on these spiritual ideas and spiritual concepts, because if more and more people to turn to them, they're going to understand how powerful and the truth of who they are and not conform to the systems, not conform to society. You know, and as you were saying too, like, you know, from school, we go in there and, you know, we're learning. It's so mental. We're training ourselves to be mental beings. And we are, yes, we have a mind, but we are, you know, my experience of this awakening has been all of the information I actually want to seek is within my body. You know, when I am in my body, that's when I can access my wisdom, my truth, my intuition, all of the energetic cues that exist for me from my physical body, but from energy as well. And that's how I want to live my life. Completely different to school, right? And when I do live like that, I make good choices. I, you know, have completely different experiences. I feel happy with the choices that I make. It's driving me forward in a really positive way. When I live up here, the experience for me is like that I do. I leave my body. And life becomes so much harder. I experience a lot of suffering, stress, and anxiety. And that is where, you know, we're almost trained to live through school. I mean, we have to learn and we use our minds to learn, but it could be a way where it is then balanced with intuitive knowing and embodiment, you know, because yes, we can learn things, but knowledge is nothing without wisdom, right? It's just stuff we know. Wisdom is what moves us forward and changes things and is a sort of compassionate force in the world. So again, it's like, don't get down there. We don't want to be tapping into that because we probably wouldn't be as obedient. But then from school, you know, we're 17, 18, what are you going to do for the rest of your life? What job are you going to get? So now go to university, get that job, get a debt, work now to pay off that student loan or that student debt, buy the house, get married, have kids, get a mortgage, and buy the car, and then buy the TVs, and then buy the kids all the stuff that they need. And like, you know, 50, 65, 70, then you get to retire, then you get to enjoy your life, like, and you're absolutely exhausted, right? And so again, it's just a system, it's a machine of like keeping us exhausted, stressed, to keep the cogs of society or, you know, the outside world going so that you don't have time or energy to question. However, we have breakdowns that fortunately now are causing awakenings and pandemics that also that are, you know, somehow that happened, but it was a catalyst for us to, you know, ask those deeper questions. Greatest gift we could have been given. For some, it was an awakening, others no. But, you know, again, it's like there's a lot outside of us that is sort of pushing back against us realizing more about who we are and asking those deeper questions.
Yeah. You said a lot there. And one thing that popped into my head, I just thought of this today once from someone's post. They prefaced what they were sharing with, I know this is a little bit woo-woo. There's truth to it. And it's I don't like the term woo-woo. I feel like it's this term that has been, it's kind of like conspiracy theory that it's like, it was created just to dismiss something. Well, that's woo-woo. That's not truth because it's mm-hmm. woo-woo. Mm-hmm. And people have to, or people feel the need to preface something that might be spiritual as like oh, this is woo woo. So, you know, don't think I'm woo woo, or like it's almost a derogatory term that is used for people. Oh, that person's woo woo. You know, obviously it depends upon how it's perceived and received, but I think I see it used often as a derogatory term, as a dismissive term of like, oh, that's just, that's
don't
just
believe.
Like, don't believe it. Yeah. So to me that there's just this language that is, we're not even really conscious to, that's meant to dismiss spirituality and connect energy, connection to something more, as not real, as, you know, pie in the sky, airy fairy. Like it's, we shouldn't believe it. We shouldn't trust it. We shouldn't kind of bet our lives on it, that it's true and that it's real. And I think for me, I've gone through my own journey of like, oh, I don't really want to talk about that I'm spiritual. I don't want to be judged as a spiritual person because I'm a rational person. And I don't associate spirituality with rationality. And so I've been on this journey of like learning to trust it myself because that did not fit into my, like I was programmed to believe that spirituality is not rational. And so because, well, we can't really explain it from the tools that we've learned are acceptable tools to explain things by standard science and all of that. So that's, I would say that's in a way devil energy, right? It's like, it, you know, it's built into our language in terms of just dismissing things, minimizing things, not giving people respect that operate in this way, encouraging us to hide the fact that we are spiritual or energetic. And then another thing I wanted to mention was, you know, as you were talking about, you know, these experiences create this anxiety and this fear and this worry by living in our heads. And what does society do? They have a solution for that. It's not the fact that we're living in our heads. It's that we're deficient in some medication that's going to solve that worry and anxiety that we're feeling. It's not a result of maybe there being some imbalance or dysfunction in society. It's there's something wrong with us and we need to take something to correct ourselves. And so, or there's, we have, you know, food that's non-food, but it's promoting those feelings of anxiety. Like there's so much like built in just this society that is perpetuating this fear, anxiety, worry, disconnection from something greater, you know, this fatigue where we don't feel that we have control and power over our lives. And so there's this, you know, I guess maybe not in Japan where you live, where there's a lot of like health promoting behaviors, but where I come from, it's like medicate, like either you self-medicate, you do something to numb the these feelings that you have rather than until you start to awaken and realize like, oh, I don't have to be, I might experience anxiety, but it's not a condition that you have for your, it's not a constant state. And that's another, I think, a disempowering aspect of our language is like, I have this disorder versus, you know, I have this imbalance that can be corrected with the circumstances and variables that don't support that imbalance, right? And so it's this disempowering language that I think that we receive from our education, from our medical system, that keeps us small and not able to see the how we can shape our past and create something better than the experiences we may be having.
So many things you said in there. Like, I just love the examples of here's where devil energy is showing up, and it's an accepted part of society, right? Just how it is. The number of times recently, unfortunately, I've heard people in my family or my life say, oh, that's just how it is. It's like, no, don't accept that, right? Like, how's that for giving away your power? Oh, that's just how it is. Like, that was just, was dumbfounded. I don't think I knew what to say in response to that. It was just like, no, you know, as you said there, I think one of the biggest battles for us is how we have created science to be the be all and end all. And if we cannot prove it, then it isn't real and true. You know, so much that I've been reading lately, especially as we start to talk about consciousness, like they're starting to be able to measure it and all these incredible things with quantum physics. And yet even within a scientific community, it's seen as, and we'll use the words woo-woo, and they're dismissed, you know, so that it's so much ostracization around truth and potential. And, you know, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago with speaking our truth. You know, there's such a barrier to that because it goes against this devil energy of, like, you know, keeping us small, keeping us contained, keeping us powerless. And then what we face is this judgment, criticism, ridicule, which is really hard to take because, you know, it feels like a big energetic evil force that comes at you. So you just choose to opt out. And I know that's been my experience of, you know, when it's been big like that, we tap out. You know, and as you said there, a lot of the times when it comes to these spiritual concepts, you know, it's dismissed and you said, you know, we shouldn't bet our lives on it. And yet the challenge it really truly is, as someone who's had the experience of both sides, it's the richness and the beauty of life exists in these experiences. And my question is why would we as a society not want to everyone to feel this? Not want everyone to know themselves in this way, to feel a deep sense of connection and peace and trust in their lives? Like, why? Why not?
Because the devil.
The devil. Where did the devil come from? Who made this devil up?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, if you think about it, it's like, well, you know, it's duality, right? It's like without it, we don't, like, without it, we wouldn't have these life experiences that are teaching us how to grow and evolve and to choose basically. Like, isn't this like the planet of free will? Like, we have free will, but if we are ruled by dense energies and we are not choosing something different, right? Like we are that whole thing that we discussed at the beginning. We believe we're free. We don't really actually see the chains that are keeping us small. And so this whole process of life is putting us into situations where we can begin to see where we are limited, where we are not free. So then we can choose or not choose to do something about it and become free. So, you know, it's like going back to, like, where did this all begin? This existence of energy and life and source and God, like, right? Like, it's that meme of, you know, there's like a ball and there's like fingers of God poking up, or all each like a little finger of God here to play out this experience. I just think of it as like this game, this experiment of, like, all right, you're going to play this role and you're going to play this role. And I'm going to learn this thing. And I just, last night I watched improv. I've never gone to see like an improv performance. And it was the coolest thing. It's like these people, this group, they're prepared in this experience of how to do it. And this is what I imagine. It's kind of like signing up to come to Earth. It's like, okay, I'm going to play this role and you're going to play this role. Let's go see how it plays out. Like, we don't know. Like, I'm going to respond to how you respond. And it's this organic unfolding. It's not like a play where all the lines are written. It's like you get to say something and then I get to respond from my, you know, all the experiences that I've had, my soul, like that's all coming to, like, responding to you right now. And then it's like, in a way, very beautiful. And how even amidst all the chaos and the struggle and the darkness, like, do I choose love or do I choose hate and fear in this moment? Right. Like, and we get to see how that unfolds as a result of our choices. And maybe I choose fear and hate right in this moment. And because I'm not learning the, because I still have to learn the lesson where I get to choose love the next time, right? Yeah. Like, and so I don't even know how I got on this tangent, but like, why do we have this energy? It's because we're here to have this experience ultimately, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No. And as you said that, I wrote down like, devil energy is actually a gift. It's the greatest gift we've ever been given. Maybe not the greatest one, but it's a great one because it is giving us the opportunity, as you said, to choose. When we are able to acknowledge its existence or the fact that there are two forces here, love and fear, and it is a world of duality, we have come here for these experiences. And again, I wrote down the word sandpaper. I always feel like when we brush up against these kinds of, let's say, concepts, conversations, experiences, challenges with things like, let's say, quote unquote, devil energy and whatever that entails, our fear, our programming, our awareness of that. And then the dance that we go through is we're like looking at it, making choices. It's like sandpaper. And that is where we're starting to change that experience of our lives. And so, yeah, what a gift. And again, part of my design is to be able to see the inherent gifts in the darkness, right? Like everything, there is a seed of light in the darkness. And so, you know, I even have my moments where I feel like, you know, the world is being taken over by darkness. It feels really challenging. And I don't even watch the news. You know what I mean? I don't read it. I just hear it. And it's so awful what I hear, that it's just like, oh, you know, it's a challenging time to be experiencing life. But as we've said multiple times, we came here for this experience. We chose this exact time to live here. And again, as you said there, you know, we're laced with choice. We can choose the fear and hate. We can choose denial. We can choose to hide. We can choose to play small. And, you know, ultimately from a soul level, we have lifetimes to live out the choice to choose from love. So whether we do it this round or not, you know, we'll get another chance. But if we're aware and are awake, like our opportunity is that to recognize that we can choose that different choice. And it makes me think of timelines. And, you know, as we grow in consciousness, we really get to experience more of, you know, the opposite of devil energy and see that it is just fuel for the fire of our greatest becoming, our greatest unraveling, our greatest, you know, realization of who we are. And that to me is actually really exciting. So thanks, devil energy.
Yeah, let's see. I just wanted to read something. A quote from this little. So the moment you become aware of these energies, they lose their hold over you. Like turning on a light in a dark room, once you see fear-based programming for what it is, it no longer operates from the shadows. This is why self-inquiry, meditation, and inner work are such radical acts. They expose the unconscious conditioning and allow for conscious choice. So that's basically what we were saying. And also, if we fear the dark, you know, we're taught to fear the dark. We learn to fear the dark. And so then if we aren't able to go into the dark and see these energies, they have control over us. But when we choose to go into the dark space, love what's there, then there's it has no power anymore, because it only has power over us if we fear it. I think I may have mentioned this before, but I'll share it again. The couple that I did all my ayahuasca ceremonies with, they would share with me about, not in ceremony, but outside of ceremony, what it was like to hold space for people. And they talked about being in the astral realm and be going up against some very dark energies and forces. And the only way that you can, quote unquote, defeat these dark energies is to come at it with more love. And so I just imagine that meant like it was this journey of them having to step into more and more love in order to transmute And also it's almost like those dark energies are like wounded children in a way, like, you know, like wounded animals that really they appear dark and evil because there is this wound there. And if we hate the wound, if we shame the wound, if we fear it, that's not how the wound heals. The wound heals through love. And I just got goosebumps thinking back to this one time in ceremony when I had such this overwhelming experience of what love, unconditional, pure love feels like. And I've spoken to, you know, maybe some people might already know this, but in ceremony with ayahuasca, traditionally you have these ícaros, these songs sung, which are basically channeled songs. And the healers will oftentimes, they'll sing to the group, but then they'll also come and sing to people directly. And this one time I was sung to, and she kept singing, like the song just kept going and going. And I realized, I was like, there was part of me that didn't feel worthy of the song continuing, like, oh, I am only worthy of so much love and attention. Mm-hmm. And she kept going and going until I became overwhelmed with this realization of like, yes, you are worthy of this song. And that's how, in a way, we aren't even aware of, like, we're so, the aspects of us that don't feel loved or worthy or valued, we're not, maybe not even aware of where that shows up, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's just so ingrained and so conditioned from such an early stage that no words could have given me that message. It was this, like, this feeling that ignited this knowing. So yeah, I'll leave it there.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. And I think that's the, you know, it is what you said is just so beautiful. Like, it is loving the shadow, because that is the journey of awakening. It is to remember that we are all sources of love. It's interesting that we started with talking about devil energy. Now we're, you know, got to the end and we're talking about love, because that's what heals. Love heals, you know, that unconditional pure love that we are. Something that I was going to say too is, like, I think with the world the way that it is, it can be really easy for many on the spiritual path to simply just want to feel the good bits, you know, and that's spiritual bypassing to say, no, I've got to stay in this high vibrational state all the time and not experience the dark, not witness it, you know, just love and light it. And I mean, that's such a trap, I think, of the journey, because exactly as you've just said there, like, we're just denying. So we're in a, you know, a limited space once again. We're actually in fear. We're not in love, because we're fearing the darkness by just wanting to be in the light. So therefore, devil energy has got you. Oh, it's done its magic, you know. So it's really important to just start to begin to, because I know several people in my life who just don't want to even feel their own personal challenges. And I'm one of them. You know, I don't want to feel the tough bits. I like the comfortable bits. But they're all gifts, you know, and the more that we practice holding them with love and compassion, like you said, as children, wounded children, that's really all it is within us, is just our wounded bits. Love that, love that, love that. It makes the whole thing easier. And I mean, that is our growth. That is our journey. You know, that is that process of transmuting the fear into love. And when we do that, like, that's what we're really shifting on a larger scale here. We're showing others how to do it. It's an energetic experience. It is not necessarily that we have to all do that and make some massive change, but it just is a beneficial thing that helps other people, that is almost like a balm, a soothing balm for others. You know, this process of awakening, as we said before, some people are going to have that in this lifetime. Others are going to have the opportunity and choose not to, you know, maybe they get another go next life. So, you know, for me, when I say that, it makes me just think that it's really, it does, again, it comes back to just our own lives, our own inner worlds. Like, how do we cultivate more and more love within ourselves, for our journeys, for our past, for our shadow, and for potentially even those that have been part of the programming that have caused us to be stuck in that sort of devil energy and filtered in to our choices, that is a powerful thing to do.
Yeah. What you mentioned about the spiritual bypassing and seeing the darkness, and that's another one of those paradoxes. And it kind of, it's a similar structure as what we talked about earlier with your experience with the devil, my experience with the devil. It's like the witnessing of the darkness here on what's happening. There's the one side of wanting to spiritually bypass or not look at it because we haven't yet developed the capacity to witness darkness and not have it affect us, our energetic. Well, and it's not even to say that it is meant to affect us, but do we know how to allow it to move through us, or does it get stuck?
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that's part of mastery, is beginning to, and I don't know, maybe some of us aren't meant to look at it in depth. I mean, but then there's also the other flip side of it, is looking at it and getting stuck in it. Right. And so,
So
I think there's those two sides, right, of the coin of, I don't want to look at it because it brings me down. Mm-hmm. And the other side is, I want to, there's kind of almost an addiction to the fear, right. And not being aware how one is, in a way, like they need to look at it because for some reason they need to look at it. And so as the middle way that you spoke about, is being able to know what we're supposed to look at, how much we're supposed to look at it, and recognize that I can see it without it entering my energetic bubble in a way, or I can cry for it and process it. And sometimes some things for myself, I'll say, sometimes I'm meant to see things because it's meant to trigger something within me that needs healing. Mm-hmm. And so looking at things and allowing what comes up for us to be processed and moved out of us, like that's part of collective shadow work, is healing the bits of us that comes up of seeing what's happening on a collective level.
Yeah.
And so we can use this darkness to what's happening to heal and to make this world a better place. And so, you know, I say the difference is, are we just looking at what's going on and feeling disempowered, hopeless, fearful? I'd say look away until you've done some personal work where you can go back and start to maybe look at things and, you know, not saying to just turn on the news and like flip it up with a straw, but how can we start to work with what we're seeing? And, you know, as we become more of aware of our triggers, what is this trigger? You know, asking the question, what is this trigger here for? Why am I triggered by this? Yeah. What am I supposed to be seeing? How is this related to me and my journey? And then also just like doing energetic clearings of the feelings and being with the feelings, right?
Yeah,
like processing those feelings.
Yep.
All of this is happening for us to grow and heal on a collective level, and a personal level. And so I think having this knowing, even when I'm like, man, things are messed up, it's like, no, it's here for a reason. And it's here for us to see. We need to see this because this has been going on for ever.
Yeah.
And so we are seeing it, you know, it feels, you know, you mentioned it feels like it's going, I don't remember the words you said exactly, but it's just like, there's just too much of it. And it's because it's here to be seen right now, so we can clear it and we can go somewhere different. And we can choose to not see it. We can we get to choose ultimately.
Yeah.
And we need to protect our space. But I think having hope and belief that our world is not going to hell, it's actually, it is transforming. And unless we clear these energies, we can't get to this better place.
Yeah. And I think really when we look at it, this is a time of the great purging of the devil energies, right? The devil energy is like flame's been turned all the way up to 10 or to high. We've got devil energy, there's rising up energy everywhere. And with that, we're given the gift of choice. We're been given the gift of choosing, what do I want to do? What do I want to see happen in the world? What is my role in this? As you said, as it triggers within us, what is ready for me to release and let go of as this old paradigm falls, breaks down, so that we can step into new. And so again, it is a time of devil energy in many ways. It has many faces out there, but it's transformational. You know, it is that process of alchemy. It's turning that lead into gold. What we're able to transmute and work through in ourselves, it's a process of liberation. It's a process of coming to really be sovereign beings who get to choose and get to create a better world. And again, it makes me just think that leads into community, you know, it leads us into, you know, people who are choosing that, and we get drawn to those people. And then that's what creates new, because we have chosen those choices. We allow ourselves that process. We naturally then end up finding people that do the same. And then I just see it as a, you know, it grows out exponentially, and that's the process forward. So challenging to do sometimes, be kind and gentle to yourself as you do it. But we can't really avoid it at this point in time, because we're at a transition point. We're at a choice point right now, collectively.
I saw this post that was really interesting today. Let me find it and I can read it, and maybe it'll give us something to speak to it. Okay, this post, the title was, "The game was rigged before you even sat down. Pluto in Aquarius, sextile, Neptune in Aries. You were never fighting the system. The system was feeding you a battle. Like a chess master sacrificing pawns to protect the queen, it let you swing, let you exhaust yourself against walls it built, because it knew you were still playing by its rules. Once Neptune enters Aries on March 30th and forms a sextile to Pluto in Aquarius, something irreversible begins. This configuration does not come to deliver us. It does not come to crown new revolutionaries or celebrate the downfall of empires. It does not play in the theater of change. It dismantles the stage entirely. And the greatest illusion, that rebellion alone is transformation, that opposition equals revolution. Pluto forces us to see what has always been there, and what it reveals is unsettling. Most rebellion is just power shifting its weight, adjusting its posture, maintaining equilibrium by allowing controlled opposition to rise. The revolutionary who topples the king soon sits upon the throne. Movements, promises, transformation, leaders speak of revolution, voices that rage against power, all too often they become part of it. Not through coercion, not through conspiracy, but through the simple gravity of power, which knows how to absorb its enemies and wear their faces. The Pluto-Neptune in the Aquarius-Aries dance does not grant revolutionaries their victories, because victory within the old framework is not revolution, it is succession. One king falls, another takes his place. Rebellion becomes governance, dissent becomes doctrine. Pluto in Aquarius asks us to see the cycle for what it is. The masses rally behind leaders who promise revolution, rewrites the same rules in a different font. The right-wing populist fighting elites channel the same dominator archetype in new clothing. The leftist movement, burning with moral certainty, recreates the same binary psychology it claims to transcend. The cycle continues, not through conspiracy, but through the collective unconscious, playing out the same ancient patterns in modern dress. This is not to say that resistance is meaningless, but Pluto-Neptune contact does not offer the fantasy of heroism, the illusion that if we just fight hard enough, we will win. It does not give us easy enemies. Instead, it turns the gaze inward. It asks, what if the most radical act is not in seizing control of power, but in making it irrelevant, building something so untethered from the old world that it collapses from neglect? What if the real revolution is not in battling the machine, but in creating something so beyond its comprehension that it cannot be assimilated? What if freedom is not won through struggle, but through an exodus so absolute that the old world becomes a relic? This isn't about building better movements or electing better leaders. This is about breaking the trance that makes us believe these are the only paths to change. True revolution does not happen in the streets or the halls of government, but in consciousness itself, in the dissolution of the psychological patterns that keep us locked in power's eternal game. Because the real shift is not from one ideology to another, but from one paradigm of being to something entirely beyond. Something ungovernable, not because it fights, but because it does not belong to the framework of power at all. This cosmic alliance doesn't ask us to win. It asks us to outgrow, to see that power's greatest trick wasn't oppression, but occupation, the colonization of our imagination, so complete that even our rebellions served its purposes. To recognize that freedom isn't found in better rules, but in evolution beyond the need for them. You cannot build a future while still obeying the gravity of the past. This isn't a call to disengage. This is a call to engage differently, to create from a consciousness so transformed that what emerges cannot be co-opted because it moves according to principles power cannot comprehend. And so the question is not how do we fight? The question is what exists beyond the game? Pluto in Aquarius is not about revolution. It is about evolution. The slow, inevitable turning of the wheel towards something power cannot see, cannot touch, cannot twist to its advantage. The collapse of the illusion, the birth of something so beyond its reach, and it was never designed to see it at all. And now you decide, do you keep playing or do you become the reality that renders the game obsolete?
Wow.
I don't know. I feel like that touches a lot of what we spoke to.
Yeah. And I think it takes what we spoke to great next level. But I love really in there what's really kept being repeated there is moving beyond power. You know, we create something new that doesn't even exist in power's realm, that we outgrow that to create something radically new. And I think there were really potent lines in there too about how a rebellion really is just sort of kind of perpetuating a cycle. Like we need something completely new.
Right. It's like the resistance. Like we believe that through fighting and through resistance is how we win. Mm-hmm. And really what, you know, we've talked about on this podcast is surrender, right? Mm-hmm. And not even engaging in the game anymore. And when we feel a force coming at us, you know, when we, you know, a lot of the time that's that duality, right? That's that good, bad, that, and I think the path of awakening and stepping into who we truly are, it's holding all of it. It's seeing all the aspects of us, the dark and the light, and not having judgment on that one side. Would we have judgment on an aspect of us being bad and an aspect being good, then we create resistance, and it's that resistance perpetuates the cycle. And like we're here right now to break a cycle. And I think when we're no longer play the game with the devil, we know it's there, but I don't like your rules. I'm not going to engage. I'm going to choose something different. You know, there was a lot of speaking to choice that we get to create this.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple of words that came through there when you said that was like transcendence. And then I think transfiguration, it's like one of the cities of the gene keys. There's self-repression, transmutation, but transfiguration, where you like literally move right above all of that into something completely new, where, you know, oppression might be where it started, but, you know, that's the seed. But the highest level of that is that transfiguration, where it's completely something completely new. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 Yeah. And it's not, it's like an alchemical process. It's mm-hmm. not like 1 + 1 = 2. Mm-hmm. It's something completely different that is a result of choosing to no longer live in this, operate from the same energy that created the current reality, right? Like we can't, yeah. the saying, the Einstein saying of,
yeah,
what is it? You can't create something new from the same, the same energy that created it. And so we're choosing different energy to operate within, to release old energies, to find beauty in the hard bits, right? Like,
yeah.
Like that, right? That's a transfiguration in and of itself, mm-hmm. to begin to see the beauty of the darkness, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what are the gifts in the shadow? Mm-hmm. For me, that all the power of all the fear that might have existed because of that darkness is gone the minute we recognize it as beautiful, mm-hmm. as a gift. And mm-hmm. so that's not typically a like a default response that we've learned to respond to what might be in the shadows. But when we come, we create something completely new when we step into those experiences from that energy.
And the visual, like, as you said, that was like seeing a flower growing out of like concrete.
I had that same vision.
Yeah. Like there it is, you know, like, it can, beauty always exists in everything that's challenging and hard and but seemingly impossible, you know. So yeah, I mean, we
it's
leave
like
it.
The lotus too. It's, yes, like growing out of
from
shit.
The mud. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like if we can remember that, hold that, then again, here we are back to nature showing us all the time it's gonna be fine. You know, great beautiful things come from muddy, dark, hard, challenging to grow places. So yeah, yes. What a wild ride we came here for.
So yeah. In conclusion,
yeah,
maybe, you know, the whole journey, seeing the devil from religion, ignoring that the devil isn't even there, those are tricks in a way, mm-hmm. both to not really become friends with what that energy has to show us and to, yes, teach us, and
yes, the gift that it is.
The gift that it is, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good place to wrap this, unless, yeah, you have anything else you want to add.
No, I think it's been an interesting conversation. And of course, we'd love to hear your thoughts, experiences. Please leave us a comment on YouTube or wherever you're listening, or send us an email. Thanks, Amanda, for a great conversation.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, fun. Everyone, for listening. We'll join you in the next episode.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. If you haven't already, please do subscribe to your favorite podcast platform or to our YouTube channel so that you can be notified when new episodes are released. Be sure to head to our website, theawakeningconversations.com, for the resources mentioned in this episode. Here, you can also leave your questions, comments, or feedback so we can create more episodes that you love. And if you'd like to be a guest to share your own awakening journey with our listeners, or you have a business or offering that supports others going through their awakenings, head to our website, theawakeningconversations.com, and click on Be a Guest, and we'll be in touch. Until next time, take care.